Hello and welcome to Great Things with Great Tech, episode 12. My name is Anthony Spiteri, and this podcast is all about highlighting companies doing great things with great technology. And in this episode, we're talking to Alan Zerikowski, CEO of Hialto. Great to have you on, Alan.
Hey, thanks, Anthony. Glad to be here.
Awesome. So just before we get into all the goodness of Hialto and talk about this really interesting software company, I just want to remind all the listeners out there that if you like Great Things with Great Tech and would like to be on the show, you can go to gtwgt.com and register your interest, or actually just send an email through to info@gtwgt.com. And all episodes are on YouTube. If you haven't subscribed yet, click the button below, and also on all the podcast stations. So, you know, Google Podcast, Apple Podcast, great to be on Spotify. And also the website is up and running at gtwgt.com. So with that out of the way, Alan, let's get into Hialto. So just first, let's just chat and maybe give the listeners just an idea of who Hialto are and what you guys do.
Sure. Thanks, Anthony. So we're a Canadian-based company, and we serve specifically MSPs, managed service providers, and cloud service providers globally. What we offer, Hialto's a SaaS-based service, and what it is basically a cloud management platform. That would be Gartner's label. If you look at a Gartner Magic Quadrant, you'll see probably about 20, 25 cloud management platforms on there. There's a lot of big companies. They all service enterprises directly. What's unique about Hialto is our cloud management platform is purpose-built for MSPs and CSPs. So it's a very simple piece of functionality. It's this multi-tenancy that's key to the MSPs and CSPs, and that's exactly what our architecture is built around.
Yeah, there you go. And obviously, you know why I'm talking to you, because we've had a few interactions in the past. In the cloud management space, being working for a service provider myself, understanding how critical cloud management platforms are and the multi-tenancy. And I think if one thing what the listeners are going to learn today is that there's not too many companies out there that manage to actually deliver what you guys have been able to deliver over the past few years successfully, right? There's very few that have been able to make a pivot. And that pivot actually starts with a company called AirVM, which is, if customers or if listeners are basically, you know, thinking Hialto, it's pretty new, maybe those people that have been around the VMware service provider space for, you know, last 5 or 10 years, they would know about AirVM. So that was founded in 2008 and actually started as an infrastructure as a service provider with data center locations in Canada, the US and UK. And I believe serving enterprises, you know, directly in the Americas and Europe. Now just talk a little bit about that, because at that time, you guys were basically just traditional infrastructure service providers, and maybe just let us know, because I know that you weren't there at that time and you joined a little bit later on, but give us a little background about AirVM and what the early years were like there.
Yeah, sure. Well, back in the day, right, this is over 10 years ago now, we were an IaaS provider, as you said, Anthony, and even back at that time, how we differentiated ourselves was we built a portal to support the IaaS business. So the portal did three things. It had a self-serve marketplace, so you could provision and make changes to your workloads. It had automation, of course, behind it. And then the third, you know, in my mind, probably the most important piece was it had usage tracking and cost tracking to feed a finance or a billing system. And all this back in the day, all this was built, of course, on the leader on VMware, on the vCenter product.
Yeah.
Back then. So it was pretty unique. Yeah.
Yeah. And so are we talking about pre vCloud Director days effectively
when the company started.
Okay. Interesting. And, you know, to be fair to you guys, not too many people were doing that back then. I mean, it was a lot of manual work. Cloud management platforms were starting to become more popular. This whole concept of automating the front end multi-tenancy. But I think you touched on something as well, the billing. The billing and procurement was always the hardest part of it. Actually having a interface to operate a VM, whether it be through remote desktop services or SSH or whatever, was always kind of there. But as a service provider, the biggest pain point was always billing and procurement. And so that's what a lot of these cloud service platforms basically look to achieve. So how did you guys start that? I mean, obviously, was it accidental, or did you have resources that were within the company, or did you hire external resources with a certain direction to build the platform? How did that sort of work?
Yeah, you know, when AirAssembly was first built, it was absolutely the vision on day one was we're gonna build a portal to do all this around vCenter. Yeah. One technology vCenter to do it, which made it relatively easy to do all three of those things: marketplace, self-service, automation, billing. But the complication, of course, was there's just more vendors and more clouds over time. But back in the day, 10 years ago, that was pretty straightforward.
There was not that much differentiating factors out there, right? You had VMware with vCenter, you had Hyper-V, but there were a lot of service providers that were trying to get in the game. So you mentioned AirAssembly. So AirAssembly was what you guys called your control panel back then.
Right on. Yeah. So we had AirAssembly, and what happened, the first pivot, you know, was we started getting approached by other VMware service providers around the world calling us up saying, hey, we'd like one of those portals. Now, of course, the very big guys like the Rackspaces and the CenturyLinks of the world, they had huge development teams. So they built their own. But for the majority, you know, 90%, probably 98% of the service providers, they, you know, did not have the resources to build and maintain a portal. So they started asking us to license our software. So that was the aha moment for us. It was like, I think we're onto something here.
Interesting. So I guess how tightly did you, because working at Zettagrid, and we've had Zettagrid on this show, and obviously in the early episodes, we've had quite a few of the cloud service providers whose core success was driven from having a strong console. And I'm sure if you talk to those guys, they would have had similar people come to them and say, hey, can we license this? Can we use it? I know that at Zettagrid, we had that almost every other week, people asking us, can we actually, you know, buy this thing off you? Can we license it? And it was a difficult thing. It was easy enough to say, yeah, let's look at it. But the reality of what it meant to decouple the cloud management platform front end from the back end was always a challenge. So does that mean that when AirAssembly was built, it was completely modularized to start with? And I guess that's what made it easy to decouple and actually make it a sellable product.
Yeah, I wouldn't say it was easy on day one, but, okay. But you know what? The lure of the market of the software side was very compelling. And we, you know, very quickly got a lot of market interest from these VMware-based service providers. And in particular, you know, one of the drivers at the time was vCloud Director when it was introduced. And then VMware, you know, stopped development on that. Yeah. And then all these service providers who invested in vCloud and invested in vCloud hardware infrastructure, they were sort of left holding the bag because they didn't have a portal anymore to work with.
Yeah, so that was actually around that first pivot time. So you've talked about that first pivot time, which was in 2014, right, when you started to do that. And that was absolutely the time when vCloud Director was being touted as almost going away by VMware. So as a company that's working with the vCenter product suite for service providers, you guys obviously saw a bit of an opportunity to go in and take that market, because if vCloud Director wasn't going to be there, then something had to be there. And from memory, there was you guys and was it ONAP were the other guys that were around at the time? Yes, so ONAP. And both of you guys were the ones that I remember specifically being the option that there was if there was no vCloud Director. So just talk a bit about the customer base at that point, because this is when you came on, right, in 2014. So you came in 2014. So how many customers did you have? How many providers were you actually servicing at the time?
Yeah, you know, we're probably servicing close to 100 providers globally, and you know, countries all around the world. And it was either vCenter or mostly at the time vCloud Director because of where VMware was with their product at that time. Yeah.
Yeah. So that was then AirAssembly 2.0. So AirAssembly was your product. You then created a product that was able to be packaged up and deployed on premises.
Right.
Yeah. Okay. How was that? Was it a .NET programmer? What was it built upon? Can you get into sort of the details around that? Not specific details.
But yeah. At the time, it was mostly PHP based. It was on-prem. was a very lightweight little VM. We'd install it in the infrastructure, yeah. And it would do things, right? It would do the, you'd have to expose the marketplace if you wanted to use a self-serve portal, but the agent on the back end keeping track of all the usage was there. And then yeah. It had a reporting capability to track all the usage to feed your finance system. Yeah. So for a period of time, we had, you know, we were offering that as a solution, as a platform to service providers. And as well, we had our data centers and we were, you know, basically selling to enterprises directly and effectively competing with some service providers, depending on the region.
Yeah.
So we had two lines of business. We had two
lines. It was two lines of business, wasn't it? Because at this stage, you were still doing the infrastructure to service, a data center business, and you were still doing this. And so that is an interesting one. So how did you deal with that? Because I know that, you know, through experience that, if you're in a way competing against the people that you're selling to, it's a difficult proposition. So how did that go?
Yeah, well, you know, we were relatively small. I mean, we had 100 customers around the world. You know, we weren't you know, a $1 billion company at that time. So there wasn't a lot of conflict, but you could see it. You could see the railway tracks heading into the tunnel and the lights going off at the end at some point if we really started to scale. And you know, we're as I mentioned, we're a Canadian-based company. When we're backed, our investors or venture capitalists here yeah. here in Canada, and basically at the board level, you know, we were looking at what are our options here. You know, should we continue down the IaaS business with our data centers and keep investing in that? You know, and or should we look at this software business? And at the time, you know, valuations for SaaS-based software companies looked very compelling.
Yes,
and that was sort of part of the driver from an investment perspective.
Yeah, no doubt. The multipliers on a SaaS-based company are much more significant than a hardware-based infrastructure company, that's for sure, if you've got a great piece of software. I've talked to a couple of SaaS providers on this show, and yeah, they all seem to have their valuations up there and they get great venture capital as well. So just on that, so did you, at this point, had you taken any venture funding, or was it privately funded, or how was the company sort of bootstrapped at this point?
Yeah, so the bootstrapping, we got three VCs in Canada who gave us some financing to get going. That was to start the software business. So, and they supported us through the, you know, probably for about 2 years until our next pivot with Hyaltum.
Yeah. Okay. So, in 2016, so this is where AVM was acquired by Turago Networks. In 2016. So that meant that you guys basically carved off the hosting business and split it, and you retained the software business still as AVM as the one entity. So how did that go? So what did the split or the acquisition look like?
Yeah, so, you know, we literally, you know, had to look at our company and, you know, the question you asked earlier, you know, to build up the software business, we hired, you know, software, you know, focused channel, go-to-market software folks to help build that business. And so we literally had two sides of the company. The development team was the same, but from a go-to-market perspective, we had one side focusing on these enterprise, the IaaS business, and the other side focusing on the software licensing business. So when we sold to Turago, who's a Canadian-based carrier, they were very interested in our VMware and those VMware based data centers that we had.
How many VMs, just out of interest, how many, like, what was the sort of stable size at that point in terms of VMs and whatnot? Do you remember roughly how many workloads you guys were hosting? Or
you're testing my memory. It would have been thousands for sure. It would have been thousands. Yeah.
Yeah. So nothing, not insignificant, basically.
It was, we had some big carriers. We had some big customers on that infrastructure. Yeah. But both in Europe and in the Americas.
Okay, cool. So then you took a little bit of the money from the buyout and you basically reinvested back into the company to develop the SaaS version of what was AirAssembly. And that's where Hyalto comes into play. And that's where Hyalto is a company name, I think, took over. So just talk a little bit about that move, the move from what was on-premises software to a SaaS-based application, but also the name change as well, because that was interesting. And maybe some of the rationale behind the name change, even though I think it's kind of obvious in terms of the history.
Sure. Thanks, Anthony. Yeah. So obviously that was a major pivot for the company, right? So with our investors and our choices at the time, we divested to Terrigo, and the purpose was to take that money and reinvest back into the platform. So at that time, you know, not only did we believe very strongly in the software side of the business, you know, particularly having a cloud management platform for this MSP CSP market, but also, you know, our on-premise version was really purpose built around vCenter and vCloud Director for VMware. And, you know, even back in 2013, 2014, these public clouds were growing like crazy. Yeah. Amazon, of course, had astronomical growth, and they still do. Yeah. Microsoft was, you know, really, really getting into the market. And so the future was pretty clear to me anyway. You know, if we're going to stay in this market, we're not going to build a business solely on private cloud. We need to have a multi-cloud platform that's going to support both private and public. So that was probably the biggest driver. So we literally, you know, made the choice, and I went back to the investors as well, in addition to the divestiture money that we got, and went back and said, you know, we need to rebuild this platform. It needs a new architecture that's going to support public and private cloud.
Yeah,
it should be SaaS based, which is a brand new architecture. So we rebuilt it right from the ground up.
Well, okay, and still primarily at that point, it was still supporting on premises vCenters basically, and supporting the multi tenancy of that. So I guess the proposition or the value add that you're offering the partners is that SaaS based, no need to install anything on premises. I'm guessing it just installs a little agent locally on premises on the vCenter. It then puts all the data in and sucks it all into the cloud. And then from there, they can then multi-tenant it. And I guess from a provider's perspective, the multi-tenancy is still the big part of it. Is it multi-tenancy at that point, or is it the billing that's still important?
Well, as you know, for the MSP CSP market, multi-tenancy is table stakes. If you don't have a multi-tenancy solution, it's not helpful at all. So that's, you know, as soon as we've covered that, and as you mentioned earlier, there's very few cloud management platforms that are multi-tenant. But then what's the real value? Why would people buy Hialto service? Yeah, number one is around the billing for sure, right? Keeping track of the usage. Not using spreadsheets and people every billing period, every month to populate the invoices for the end customers, but
yeah,
you know, to have an automated method to keep track of what's all the usage in my vCenter, what's all my usage in my Veeam storage as an example, and how can I get that without human beings pushed into my finance system.
Yeah, okay, good stuff. Yeah, so you guys have connectors into external finance systems. I'm guessing as well your partners can get all the data through APIs as well, potentially, and, you know, have that data filtered out. So that's pretty cool. So you mentioned Veeam, and then, because I believe that was one of your, that was actually your next sort of technology step outside of VMware, where you decided to do something around Veeam. So maybe just briefly explain that and how what you did there and how that was different to, you know, working with VMware technologies.
Yeah, for sure. So on the VMware side, so we support vCenter and vCloud. That was the first iteration of Hialto. That was a no-brainer for us. We knew the technology very, very well to be able to do what the platform does. As you said, right, as you know very well, Anthony, the majority of VMware-based private hosted service providers are using Veeam as their backup. And this pain point, you know, this general pain point of being able to automate usage tracking for every billing period and push that into a finance system is there not only for VMware, for Veeam, it's there for every single backup or disaster recovery service vendor that anyone's using. It's very, very common. So it was a no-brainer for us to build it out for Veeam. That was the first one. So that really tested our architecture, our SaaS architecture.
Yeah.
You know, the whole vision was to support multi-technologies. We did it with Veeam first, and it worked, and that really opened the door. And our intent in 2021, of course, is to do more as the market demands.
Yeah. So in 2019, you added support for ConnectWise, which is, you know, a PSA tool, which I know very well as well. So just talk about, this sort of integration intrigues me though a little bit as well, because just explain why a tenancy platform like you needs to integrate with something like ConnectWise, because for those that maybe don't get why, because I kind of, if I'm looking at it from a layman's perspective, I see a multi-tenant cloud management platform and what it does. I say ConnectWise. I understand there's some billing synergy, but why ConnectWise and why those RMM tools or PSA tools? Sure.
Yeah, great question. So as you said, you're just very good on the technology side, Anthony. The one big difference between AirAssembly, our original on-prem product that's now been decommissioned, and Hialto, our SaaS-based product, is our Hialto SaaS-based product, everything is available as an API. And our whole front end, actually, if you choose to use the GUI, everything, our whole front end is written to our own API. So this was pretty significant. So when we introduced Hialto right at the tail end of 2018, and in 2019, we were getting the VMware service providers coming to us, and they were saying, hey, well, with all these APIs, we've got a proprietary billing system. Can we write some middleware to do that? Yeah, absolutely you can. And then the ConnectWise PSA, the ConnectWise Managed PSA, kept popping up. And we started getting not only service providers in North America, but service providers in Australia and New Zealand, as you know, and in Europe. And they started coming out. It's like, hey, there's something here. All these guys, all of them are manually pushing this VMware and Veeam usage into their ConnectWise Managed PSA. Well, how much effort would it take to build an integration and get rid of the spreadsheets and the people in the middle? It turns out it wasn't that much effort. And so we introduced that to market, and that really shone a light on, wow, we've got a big opportunity here. Partly because ConnectWise, from my estimation, they probably have 40% of the RMM market. They're a major player. They've got thousands of MSPs, and any of those, the Venn diagram of, ConnectWise MSPs with who are offering a VMware service or managing VMware, they're interested, right? Because this is all manual process for them, and they can't scale their business without it.
That's a great sub point as well, I suppose. You're talking about, by you having extensibility in your platform and being able to leverage and integrate ConnectWise, you then open up a distribution point with regards to their own customers, their own partners, right? Because all of a sudden they can go to you and say, hey, well, who would you recommend to run the automation platform or cloud management platform together with ConnectWise? And they go, well, Hialto does this. They've got some cool integrations. Go check them out. So I think it's pretty savvy. And that's kind of a strategic play for you as well. Like, how do you choose that next platform to support? I think this year you've been working on Azure support. So, you talked about the public clouds and how that was a driver for you even back in 2012, 2013, 2014. So how do you see the public clouds being part of Hialto's future in terms of, I believe personally there's a massive opportunity for service providers to leverage a public cloud and turn it into some sort of managed service, to turn it into some sort of revenue generating opportunity. Because without a control plane, customer A can just go and do anything on a public cloud willy-nilly. So if a service provider can then leverage a control plane to have some awareness and control of that, that becomes a very good proposition for them. So is that where Hialto is going with regards to the public cloud?
I think we're doing both on public and private. So how did we get to the conclusion we're going to support Azure this year? Well, we always knew we were going to support public clouds when we rebuilt this platform. And we're essentially a 10 plus year old startup. We listen to our customers every time we talk to them, and the MSP CSPs that we talk to, Azure kept coming up globally as a matter of fact. There is a minority, based on my market sample size, of MSP CSPs who are supporting Amazon AWS as well. Mm-hmm. Very rarely, frankly, do we hear about Google Cloud in the MSP market. Occasionally, especially of late, we're hearing a little bit more about IBM Cloud. And even Oracle Cloud has come up, to my surprise, a couple of times some of their investments.
Well, if we just go back to that, so the really interesting thing, it doesn't surprise me that Azure is something that you're seeing more, because when you think of these traditional CSPs, MSPs, and what they did, and if they were working on VMware technologies, they're obviously working within Windows technologies. Maybe some of them are even hosting Hyper-V-based services as well for infrastructure service. They know Azure. Azure feels more familiar to these guys. So when they're now go, and their customers feel more familiar and safer in Azure. So the more traditional IT guys are moving into Azure because they can consume it in a familiar way. Whereas you look at AWS, it's pretty developer-centric. All the serverless architecture that they've got in there, very cloud native. It's kind of a different breed, very different breed. And then when you look at Google, Google Cloud in itself is even more different because that's more targeted at sort of your, you know, machine learning, AI, analytics type of situation. I mean, no one, if you had to pick, if you had someone who had an on-premises workload, I think 9 times out of 10, they'll probably lift and shift that to Azure if they had the choice of all three. So I kind of see those numbers and I understand how you've resonated towards Azure to start with. So what sort of integrations are you doing? Can you talk a bit about that in terms of what's coming and what features it's going to have?
Happy to. I think there's another reason though. I just want to add, Anthony.
Yeah.
You know, aside from the fact that they're technically comfortable, as you said, with Windows and with Office 365, there is huge commercial relationship for the majority of MSPs who have a commercial relationship with Microsoft. And Microsoft,
I was going to say, yeah, the commercial's big, yeah.
They Microsoft make it pretty easy. I call them the golden handcuffs to get you drawn.
Have some credits. Yeah.
And it works. So I know I would say 9 out of 10 MSPs we talk to have a relationship with Microsoft in one form or another. And if they're not reselling Azure services, they're probably managing Azure services on behalf of their end customers simply because they have to. They're worrying about the security, they're worrying about backup, they're worrying about DR, worrying about all the normal stuff that they get hired to do. So Microsoft is in there, and especially with Office 365, you know, I would say 10 out of 10 MSPs, if they've got a, you know, any kind of remote desktop based business, they're probably reselling Office 365 around that.
Without question. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. So is Office 365 part of your future then as well?
I think it is. You know, our initial feature set, our MVP is just to solve the very simple problem for these MSPs. You know, what are my end customers consuming on Azure in a real time basis? And that's going to be our first MVP. We'll get to Office 365. I predict, you know, maybe at the end of 2021.
Yeah.
But in the first half, we're really trying to help them because they don't have a clue. You know, I say just with tongue in cheek, the big public clouds are, you know, are really like drug dealers, right? They make it very, very easy for you to consume your compute and storage services, but you get a bill at the end of the month and you don't know what's going on until you get that bill. And when you do get that bill, it doesn't have, you know, cell phone call detail in it at all, right?
And it is what it is. It is what it is. You kind of got to deal with it, right? Bill shock is huge for that play there. And I know that, you know, a lot of when I was, you know, even 4 years ago, there were people coming out of Azure and AWS because they went in there thinking it was the panacea, the duck's nuts. And they would find that either the performance wasn't up to scratch, but 9 times out of 10, the reason for people exiting was because they just weren't aware of the overall costing. So if you can provide those people with some sort of dynamic real-time costing along the way, that's so critical and valuable, I think. And, you know, and if you can then feed that up to an MSP that can then manage that for a customer, that's even better.
Exactly. And this is the MSP's dilemma, right? Is they're getting SMBs and mid-sized enterprises coming to them. Can you help me not only manage the service, my Azure service, as we said, you know, for security and DR and backup and all that, but also my costs. I need to get a handle on these. And there's really, in my opinion, very few tool sets out there that are doing that for these public clouds, for MSPs in a multi-tenanted manner, and certainly not for public and private. And then the third piece, you know, they're certainly not taking that information and very easily automating the workflow of pushing the usage into a billing system, into a PSA like ConnectWise or other PSAs that we plan to introduce in 2021 as well.
Yeah, no, that's awesome. So here's my thing. I guess when you look at it, I know the answer here. How did you disrupt the market initially? Like, why do you feel like you guys were able to pivot, almost inversely pivot, I would call it, because most of the people that I know in the industry started maybe as a small professional services organization and decided to do hosting, and they pivoted to infrastructure hosting, or they pivoted to backup as a service. But you guys kind of started as infrastructure and pivoted to this software as a service company. So How did you disrupt the market enough initially to make that step?
Yeah, well, I think with, you know, thanks to VMware and their hesitation with the vCloud Director product a few years ago, that was one big step for us from the market. I think just, you know, the fact these hyperscaling public clouds are growing so fast, and they're creating, frankly, a lot of pain points for your average MSP, CSP to manage them. You know, we're listening to the market and what these pain points are, and that's a key one for us. And to me, the big growth opportunity for us is that, you know, we sort of walked into it with this ConnectWise need from the market. There's ConnectWise, you know, by my estimation, has probably 40% of the market for PSAs, basically to do the invoicing for the cloud usage and all the other services that they provide as well. We actually have a beta. I don't know if you were aware of this. We actually have a beta for ConnectWise's main competitor, Datto, for Autotask for their PSA.
Autotask.
By my estimation, that's probably another 40% of the market. And we're talking to some of the smaller RMM shops like SolarWinds as well. So my intent, and at the moment, you know, for a multi-tenanted cloud management platform for purpose-built for MSPs and CSPs, no one's in my space yet, fingers crossed, who are looking specifically at these PSAs to feed the usage.
So that's an interesting point, actually. You know, I still look at the space, right? And my estimation of it is that there's two types of providers, right? There's one type, there's the first type, which are smart enough to have the internal skill set to produce a cloud management platform of their own portal. But the majority can't. And and I say this to a lot of people, even internally, my previous company, wherever I talk to partners, that I kind of like the whole sink or swim approach, generally speaking. So the great partners, the great service providers will rise to the top because that's what they do, right? And the also runs will just basically stay there. However, I think what you guys enable is those providers that don't have that skill set for whatever reason to compete with the big guys, right? To offer services and to be an additional option to those bigger guys that are out there that have their own cloud management platforms. And let's be honest with you, a lot of software that's written isn't written from a multi-tenant perspective to start with. So if you guys have the skill set to be able to take a piece of software that's inherently not multi-tenant and somehow mold it into your platform to deliver it as a multi-tenant service, that's huge and significant.
It is. And again, you know what, as you know, SaaS-based companies, right, what markets do you want to focus on? You want to go after the enterprises and all the big guys. Of course, everybody does. We've chosen to stay out of that. That's a big ocean, but there are a lot of sharks in it. We're in the, you know, comparably speaking, a smaller market with managed and cloud service providers. And there's only a couple players in it. And as I said, I think what we're doing is pretty unique for this cloud management platform right now. We see three tiers when we talk to MSPs, CSPs. The first one is those who have there's probably four tiers. They're the very big guys at the top who have big development shops and they built their own platform and they can afford to maintain that. And that's probably 1-2% of the MSP, CSP market. Down one level though, if you don't have a big development shop, because it takes a lot of heavy lifting, as you know, to stay up to date with Veeam releases and VMware releases and Wise releases, a lot of APIs here. The next level down, we talk to a lot of MSP CSPs who have revenue leakage and they're literally losing, you know, pick a number, 5, 10, 15% a month because they can't accurately track, you know, to the second their usage and bill. And that's money on the table. And sometimes that's very embarrassing from their perspective when they have to go back to a customer and say, hey, we've been underbilling you for 10, 15%. I talked to a service provider in the UK a couple of months ago, they were underbilling 80%.
That's a bad day. Yeah. I mean, yeah, to a certain extent, do you kind of suck it up or do you go, well, sorry, Mr. Customer, let's split it half and half. But even then 40% is tremendously significant. So that's another advantage right now. I think it's a great story. I'm really excited. It was great to have you on. I mean, the time's already, you know, almost up. Again, like I say to all of my guests, we could talk for hours on this sort of stuff, especially when it's something that I love and I'm so close to with regards to the VMware service provider ecosystem, where you guys came from, the fact that you're deeply linked, but not directly linked to vCloud Director, the pivot that you guys have and what you're doing today in the market from a SaaS-based perspective. So great to have you on. It's been good information. And what can, if people want to go and check out more about Hiolto, what can they do? Have you got any offers or, you know, where can they go?
Yeah, if they come to their website and contact our team, we'd be happy to give you an overview. We're happy to run a trial. We run free trials, so if you wanted to take the car for a test drive and kick the tires, we're happy to set you up. Again, it's pretty effortless, you know, to especially if you've got a Datto or a ConnectWise PSA. We literally, in about an hour, we can get you up and running, and we can be collecting your usage and populating your PSA, and your techs and your finance people don't have to use spreadsheets or spend any more time on it.
Sounds compelling. That's awesome. Yeah. All right, no worries. And I'll put all that up on the show notes. We'll have a list to all those links up there. So yeah, just to finish off, you can find me, Anthony Spiteri, at anthonyspiteri.net, at gtwgtpodcast, and gtwgt.com. Again, if you aren't subscribed, or if you're new to the show and you like what you hear, you can press the subscribe button below or go to gtwgt.com. And with that, thank you, Alan. Thank you, Hiolto. And we will see you next time.
Thanks, Anthony.
Thanks, Alan.